Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Jason Alder from AB Motorsports, and you're listening to the Thursday Night Thunder on the Speedway Digest Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the 30th edition of Speedway Digest, Thursday Night Thunder, the most hardcore motorsports program on the air. It's episode 163 of the series. Last week's Redmonds are behind us, hopefully. The weeks are gone for a few more months. I'm your host, Adam Jason Sinclair, and on tonight's program, we had a guest to talk about the Rose Cup races in Portland, reviewing the Trans Am race of last weekend, and discussing whatever other motorsports topic of in the conversation. Unfortunately, Michael Molly will not be joining us again this week as she's battling a bit of laryngitis. She should be back in 2 weeks, however. Let's start by reviewing the Super Chevy show held this past weekend at Palm Beach International Raceway, shall we? Unfortunately, the show wasn't as super as you would have been made to expect by the information that the track provided. They promised groundbreaking nitro cars and fuel alters from Earth Shaking Entertainment like Extreme Pursuit and Boston Strangler, which normally bring plenty of spine-tingling action to the Super Chevy Pro Show. Now, the pros weren't bad, but they definitely weren't ground-pounding. The Extreme Pursuit was an interesting-looking machine. It looked like it was probably a funny car in its previous incarnation that had been turned into an altered-type car. It was a police-themed machine. Kind of cool. You can look it up, I'm pretty sure, by searching Extreme Pursuit in your favorite browser. Boston Strangler is a historic funny car. It probably would classify as a pro-stabber funny car in its current points scheme for the International Hot Rod Association, as well as probably a nostalgia funny car for the NHRA. Pretty cool, but two fancy cars do not make for a pro show. There were other cars there as well. The crowd favorite Billy Wagner wheel stander, which I honestly don't remember seeing. So funny car. Pretty cool to look at, but there weren't very many of those. And Southern Slingset, Nostalgia, Front Engine Dragster. There were several of those there in the facility. They were pretty cool. It's kind of weird to have them there because they're not really Chevys. Neither is the Boston Strangler or the Boston Challenger. Those are Dodges. So, kind of didn't fit the Super Chevy theme of the evening. For a price of $20 for adults, children under 12 free, you expect at least a little show. And that's what we got, a little show. The field was fairly small. Track wasn't in the most appealing shape. In fact, it was probably the worst I've seen it in several years. And the announcer was nowhere to be heard. There was a small attempt at an announcer at some point in the event, but it was really small. It didn't make it go over very well. It was actually quite sad, if you think about it. They did have a decent-sized car show, however, but they charged an entry fee of $30 and $10 for one spectator. Car club prices were just $35 each. Just remember that the car clubs that were present there were some pretty decent representation from local Chevy-based car enthusiasts. However, there are bigger shows at the Palm Beach outlets on a monthly basis, alongside the drive every so often. They're free. So, there's that. They also have Block meet where participants paid for a 10x10 space for $50. There really wasn't a swap meet there. I thought there was probably three or four different swap meet stands. There's been bigger swap meets in the past by far. So it really was not a very good show. It really wasn't. And it was very unfortunate. An interesting option that they talked about this past weekend's event. The $50 track experience. The track experience would have allowed anyone to drive their personal car on Palm Beach International Raceway's road course and autocross track under controlled conditions. Speeds were restricted, and the lead follow will be used on the road course. Unfortunately, though, it seemed like no one chose this option. That would be a pretty cool option, though. I don't think my 2010 Scion XB is exactly set up for a $50 track experience. I have had cars in the past, however, that would have been pretty awesome to race on the Palm Beach International Raceway road course, but there weren't any takers for that on Saturday. Anyway, there might have been on Friday. I don't know. I wasn't there on Friday, but I know there was definitely a smaller event on Friday as opposed to Saturday's full day of racing. And the bad thing is, if you paid for a full day of racing, you wouldn't be there for a full day. Really wasn't enough to see. There for about 3.5 hours total time at the track. Maybe a little less than 3.5 hours total time at the track. And in that 3.5 hours, we pretty much saw everything that was there. We saw the entire car show. We saw the whole paddock area where all the cars were set up. And we saw pretty much every single car go down the track several times. So it definitely wasn't a whole day activity. I can see we spent a couple hours there. And for $20, it's not too bad for a couple hours. But it wasn't good. And that's just pretty sad for Palm Beach International Raceway. I know we've had a lot better events in the past. In fact, I was wearing a 2014 Nitrogram shirt there, the IHRA Palm Beach Nationals. And that was an amazing event in 2014. That was only 5 years ago. And it's pretty sad how far the International Hot Rod Association and Palm Beach International Raceway in particular have fallen in those 5 years. Now, that does, we have talked about that numerous times on this program. About the niche market that auto racing currently fills, but it's just really bad. Hopefully it improves. There were multiple classes of drag racing there: top eliminator, box eliminator, no box, and Chevy Runman Grand, as well as the Chevy Truck Index. Some of those cars are pretty awesome to look at. There's a wide variety of automobiles there. Some of them are former pro stock cars. It might be considered pro mod cars, and some of them are pretty much stock cars right off the street. There's dragsters and other sorts of machines there, racing machines, pure racing machines. Really neat to see that. But again, it wasn't a very, very big field. The field was really small, in fact. It was really, really small. So it wasn't the best, and it needs improvement. The Super Chevy Shows is supposed to be the premier destination for all things Chevrolet. Hopefully next year they can work on making it. So, tickets are on sale now for the famous 59th Annual Rose Cup Races. The 2019 event will take place July 12th through July 14th at the historic Oakland International Raceway. And will feature GT4 America and GC America Professional Racings, plus four race groups showcasing the best amateur racers in the Northwest. A Portland Race Festival event, Rose Festival event, presented by Friends of PIR. The Rose Cup races feature racing competitors from both Oregon Regional Sports Car Club of America and the Cascade Sports Car Club. This year's amateur race groups include the Big Boar FOPIR Rose Cup feature race, presented by Officio Singapore. Large displacement engines like Corvettes, Camaros, Mustangs, Shelby GT350s, Cobras, and Porsches are all represented in the class. Three classes within one race called RC1, RC2, and RC3, and on performance level. The Stefaniala Challenge, presented by Casa Bella Granite, Marble Sports. Famous for tough battles and finishes, they're just inches apart. These Mazda Miatas are also in the fight for the Seat Long Championship in the Northwest Spec Miata Tour. Spec Racer Ford Showdown, presented by Market of Choice. Open cockpit financial sports car racers. By 1.6-liter Ford engines with the focus on the drivers. This highly competitive group with multiple lead changes per lap, a common occurrence. And finally, the Vintage Grand Prix presented by Columbia Roofing. A Rose Cup races tradition with a wide variety of brands and iconic models that will have fans reminiscing about their favorite cars when they were growing up. These four amateur race groups will augment professional racing groups, including the newly named GT4 America and TC America Professional Racing Series, which features a large variety of makes and models with extremely close and exciting racing in a sprint car race doubleheader format. Fans can look forward to professional racing Saturday and Sunday. The Rose Cup Races Week features practice and qualifying on July 12th, and racing events on July 13th and 14th. Gates open at 30 a.m. daily, with cars on course by 8:30 a.m. on Friday and Saturday, and 9 a.m. on Sunday. Races run until early evening. Tickets are on sale now at rosecup.com. Admission costs $30 for a 3-day ticket with inside parking. Single-day tickets run $10 on Friday, $20 on Saturday, and $20 on Sunday. Admission for children ages 12 and under is free, but accompanied by paying adults. Present and past members of the military receive free admission with valid ID at the gate. Parking costs only $5 for single day, $15 for weekend pass, and $175 for motorhome pass. It includes two-day, three-day admission tickets. Excuse me. Unlimited number of camping spots, non-motorhome, tent, small travel trailer, etc. Three-day tickets are available for $60. Include one admission ticket and a reserve location by turn number 7. Those cup races were the first major event held at PRR in 1971 and has taken place annually ever since. Learn more at rosecup.com and follow Rose Cup Races at Rose Cup Races on social media using the hashtag RoseCup59. Now, please welcome Gary Bachman of the Rose Cup Races to the program with a little bit of stuff to tell us about the event. Hello, how are you doing this evening?
Hello, Wes. Adam, Gary Bachman.
Great to talk to you this evening. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the Rose Cup Races, first off?
Well, actually, Adam, it's great. Thank you for all your information tonight. The Rose Cup is in our 59th year this year. Next year will be our 60th year. This began in the track was kind of beginning in the late 1958, 1959. And then we actually had Cascade Sports Car Club put the first Rose Cup race on in 1961. And then SCCA took over the races in the early 1960s. And in Friends of PIR, this will be our fourth year this year of handling the Rose Cup race ourselves.
And I know there's lots of different classes and everything, but how many teams do you expect to show up for the race?
Well, we're hoping that this year in the GT America, we should have a good 25 cars coming from the GT group, probably up to about 40 cars at the TC America. And then we should have, between the Spec Miata, Spec Racer Ford, the Rose Cup races, and the vintage cars, we should have at least 150 of the owned cars from the Portland area and the Northwest that are coming to race. So we're going to have somewhere in the vicinity of 200, 220 cars throughout the weekend, which would be great to watch.
Sounds like it. Sounds like it'd be a great event. What's the track record there?
Well, there's a number of different track records. Last year in GT4, it was a 116. In TC race, it was a 119. So 116, 119 for the cars coming from World Challenge. GT1 car, the last they ran a couple of years ago, I think Todd Harris did like a 113. Spec Matters are about a 129, I think is the lap record now. Spec Racer Ford's about a 123. And then a whole bunch of different vintage cars, some slower and some faster. But all depends on the horsepower of the car and which group is running.
And what do you think is the most exciting part of the weekend?
I think that the most important part for the spectators is that we're going to have races going on with a 10-minute break in between. Not only do we have the professional race groups here with World Challenge, but we also have the four local races here from the different groups that we have. So basically, you come out to watch a race at 9 o'clock in the morning when the track goes hot. Without about a 10-minute break in between, you're going to be able to watch a lot of great races. Some races like Spec Miata, where you could have, it's kind of like a NASCAR race, 10 or 15 cars all in the lead going for passes. And it's going to be a great weekend with a lot of activity for the spectators for the entire day.
And let's go ahead and ask one more question. Who's the most famous person to win the Rose Cup races?
The most famous person, I think, would be a gentleman, a local gentleman that's raced for a million years here, Monty Shelton. Monty Shelton won dozens of the Rose Cup races over the years, everything from Porsches to Trans Am cars to all kinds of cars. I think Monty Shelton would be my number one pick.
Awesome. And where can my listeners go for more information about the event?
The best place to go would be rosecup.com. And then if you can't claim to get onto rosecup.com, you can always go to portlandinternationalraceway.com and click on the Rose Cup. That is rosecup.com. The event's going to be coming up in the middle of July, and tickets are all on sale now.
Well, we'd like to thank you very much for coming to the program this evening. And hope you have a great event out there. I'm trying to get one of the people from Speedway Digest to come out to the racetrack for that event, and hopefully we'll get you some more coverage that way, too.
That would be awesome. Thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
All right, you too. Good night.
Once again, that was Mr. Gary Bachman, who represents the Rose Cup races held out there in Portland International Raceway. As I stated a moment ago, I'm trying to get somebody from SpeedwayDigest.com, probably Michael Mullally herself, there to head out to the racetrack at Portland. I know she's been there before, and we're going to go ahead and knock on wood that she's able to head up again this year for the race at Portland International Raceway, both the Rose Cup races as well as the IndyCar race that takes place in September. Are you a race car driver, crew chief, pit member, track owner? Maybe you're just a huge fan of sport. Contact either Michael or myself to get your spot on the show. After all, you deserve your 15 minutes of fame, and we'd love to hear from you. While we're standing by for our next guest this evening, let's go ahead and listen to a selection from Ron Pastana and the Pit Crew. This is Devil in Your Helmet.
About your race car, you sure looks bent. Will you be here next week? And are we still friends? I really didn't mean it. It was a racing deal. I got a little too close. It got a little too real. Then you checked up in the corner and I tapped you in the rear. You went spinning somewhere and it's all so clear. There's a devil in your helmet. Who's on tonight?
Devil in your helmet.
Devil in your helmet. Giving bad advice.
Devil in your helmet.
It's been a good day so far. I put her in the show. Sitting nice and pretty outside front row. Two laps later, babe is on a rail, going for the lead with the devil on my tail. Then wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, where'd they all go? Late break, burn, turn, there's the wall. No, please not the radiator, please not the clip. You may be the savior, but here's a little tip. Well, there's a devil in your helmet, who's on tonight? Put her on the trailer, take her to the shop. Lay in bed, toss and turn, well, shouldn't I not? Plan a little payback, plan a little hell. Y'all shake your hands, pal, but only time will tell. If there's a devil in your helmet, who's on tonight?
Devil in your helmet.
Devil in your helmet. Giving bad advice.
Devil in your helmet.
Devil in your helmet. Well, so the story goes.
Devil in your helmet.
And now every
Once again, that was Devil in Your Helmet by Ron Fasana and the Pit Crew. And again, we'd like to thank Gary Bachman for being on the show this evening. Pretty informative of him to be on there, and I think that's kind of cool that the history of the road up races. There aren't a lot of racing that has that sort of history, so fewer and fewer all the time. A true Cinderella story unfolded on Monday at Lime Rock Park after Chris Dyson blamed Trans Am, presented by Pearly Victory in the number 20 Plaid Ford Mustang. Ernie Francis Jr. recovered from an early race setback to claim a hard-fought second-place result ahead of Josh Hurley to complete the podium as Trans Am returned to the traditional Memorial Day weekend at Lime Rock Park. Tommy Greasy in the number 8 Godzilla of the Monsters, Chevrolet Camaro, the awesome machine, scored fourth at the finish, with Paul Fix in the number 4 Ave Motorsports Ford Mustang crossing the line in fifth. Starting from the pole, Dyson never surrendered the lead in his first TA victory of the season, following 100 miles of flat-out racing just days after suffering a crash in sprint car competition. Dyson, unsure if he was going to be medically cleared to participate following a wreck in the Hoosier 100 on Thursday night, once lead in the tight TA championship, making for a perfect ending to his fairy tale weekend. Starting from pole, Dyson didn't shy away from unleashing the 50-plus horsepower around the tight Connecticut circuit that's known as Racing's Polar Ring. Bustling his way through traffic, Dyson started to build a gap from Hurley in the number 03 McNeese and Associates Chevrolet Camaro, who was pressuring the hometown favorite for the lead. Starting from row 2, Hurley got the jump on Ernie Francis Jr. in the number 90 Frameless Shower Doors Ford Mustang, entering turn 1 to take second. Francis Jr. tailed Hurley, waiting for the perfect opportunity to sack. But it was late race lap traffic that allowed the defending TA champion to pay back Hurley, reclaiming P2 with 4 laps left in the race. The podium finish edged Francis back into the championship contention, only trailing the nose championship leader Dyson by 8 points. The race featured 3 rounds of competition, with Super GT and GT Machining sharing the back with the high horsepower TA class entries. In a perfect balance of battling competitors, while watching Sports driver Mark Bowden went flag to flag in the SGT class race for his first win of the season in the number 46 Beverage Flavors International Porsche 991 GT3 Cup car. Brian Kleeman in the number 07 Advanced Composite Products Cadillac CTSV SGT took second, while Adrian Waskowski in the number 96 Fast Auto Ford Mustang found himself on the battle podium in third. In near perfect drive, Stephen Davidson railed his number 22 DaVinci Plastic Surgery Aston Martin Vantage to score the GT class victory. Kerry Hitch won the Masters Award in the TA class following a 10th place finish in the number 19 Advanced Composite Products Cadillac CTSV. As the winner of the TA class round, Dyson took home the $500 Amco Gears Top Gear Award, while Hurley received the Cool Shirt Cool Pass of the Race Award for his big move on the way to the podium. The TA, SGT, and GT drivers have a 2-month break before returning to first for the fourth. For full results, standings, awaiting photos, visit gotransam.com. The TA 2 powered by AM machines will stage a doubleheader event in Detroit this weekend as part of the combined IndyCar and AMSA WeatherTech event weekend. And we're looking forward to that race. It should be pretty cool. While we're standing for our next driver, Chris Dyson, let's go ahead and listen to at least a segment of Dirt Track Racing by Ron Pastana. We'll be right back. That was Dirt Track Racing by Ron Bell and the Pit Crew. And now, we are pleased to welcome Chris Dyson to the program. Hello, how are you doing this evening?
Hello, hi, I'm great.
First off, congratulations on your victory this past weekend at Lime Rock. Tell us a little bit more about the race.
Well, it was an exciting race for us. Lime Rock is my home track, and it was the fourth round of the Trans Am Championship. And you know, we've had a couple of tough races coming into the weekend. So I was excited heading into the track, very confident, and the car was brilliant from the word go. You don't get too many weekends like this. You got to savor it. The car was fastest in every single session, and we led every single lap. That's an unusual but great experience when it happens.
We understand your family has a long history at Lime Rock Park. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what it meant to add another win to the Dyson Dynasty?
Well, I've been going to Lime Rock since I was a little boy. Probably since the early 80s. And, I've been watching my dad race there forever, and he's had some really memorable victories there, and a lot of those Memorial Day weekends really planted the seeds of my dreams for what I wanted to accomplish in racing, and Lime Rock was always, I think when you're a little kid, the home track is the home turf, so a lot of my formative club racing, SCCA days were I cut my teeth there, and IMSA obviously did a lot of racing there with the American Le Mans series. So this was my first time visiting the track with the Trans Am series, and it was wonderful because we got to run on the traditional circuit, which is just brilliant. And to stand in Victory Circle with my family and friends there, both my parents there, was just a dream come true.
What's your favorite thing about being a Trans Am driver?
I love the cars. I think the cars are just fantastic. You know, I love that we get to race these monstrous 850 horsepower, unapologetic, brutally fast vehicles in this modern day and age, where racing has become very sanitized, very dull, very automated. I think in a lot of cases, you've done things with the cars that are advancements, but they take away a lot of the driver's input from the equation. I like that the Trans Am cars really force the drivers to do their job and to control, in essence, what's, you know, an unadulterated beast. And I like the fact that the races are good length. You know, you've got a great camaraderie in the paddock, good hard racing with the competitors. And, you know, it's you're looking at, you know, an hour-long sprint race. There's no let-up the whole way. So all those things put together, you know, plus the fact that Trans Am is a series that's, you know, over half a century old with a straight line back to its heritage, you know, to be part of that continuum, it's really special.
Ron, how far was your racing idol?
Ooh. Boy, I had a lot of influences. I can't say there was just one. I mean, obviously, my father was my hero growing up. I think, I think that's the case for a lot of boys. But in my case, you know, he really was. As far as racing heroes, I had a lot of guys that I thought would be great models. And certainly from the road racing side, I mean, I got to grow up in IMSA in the 1980s. So if you looked at any of those car owners and their drivers, you know, I could name, you know, half a dozen of them. You know, I mean, Al Holbert, Derek Bell, Klaus Ludwig, Price Cobb, obviously, and, you know, James Weaver, probably the most influential guy in my racing career, was part of the family forever, and a true hero of mine. You know, and that's just on the road racing side. And, you know, clearly we had other drivers I looked up to, you know, in other disciplines, you know, certainly on the circle track side. But certainly from a road racing perspective, you know, any of those guys from the 80s were kind of my heroes growing up.
What's your most memorable race moment?
Boy, I got to say, this last weekend is right up there. I mean, you know, I was racing in the Hoosier 100 last Thursday, and I had an accident, and a pretty bad one. And, you know, I was sitting there in the hospital getting scanned at Methodist Hospital out in Indiana. And the one thing on my mind was, my God, I might miss Lime Rock. And as I sat there kind of thinking it through in my mind, I said, no, I'm not. I'm not going to miss Lime Rock. So, you know, you always play out in your head kind of the ideal weekend. And little did I know that the ideal weekend was going to happen, you know, while I was still pretty banged up from a pretty bad accident. But I told my dad on Thursday night he was going to have to tie me to the bed in the hospital to keep me away from my home track. And to be out there on this last Monday and win that race with my family there, beautiful weather, you know, after some of the tribulations we'd been through the previous couple of days, it's got to be right up there for me. You know, obviously winning the Watkins Glen 6 hours the first time I did it was great. Winning a couple IMSA championships was great. But I have to say Monday was definitely one of the most memorable days of my racing career.
Well, I think you've been in several different major series all over the world in the past several years. What's your most favorite race that you've ever been in?
My most favorite event? I would say that, you know, really the first Le Mans I did was phenomenally exciting, I think because it was so new and because it's just such an overwhelming experience to be there. I was in one of the fastest cars in the race, and I was quite young, but, you know, it had been something that had been a dream of mine forever. And I would rank that experience right up there as far as just top experience of events as a driver.
What's your racing goal for 2019?
Well, our agenda is usually pretty short. You know, we go racing to win races and to win championships, and we've got a really good shot at doing that in the Trans Am this year. You know, we finished third last year, and it was a rookie season for me. We learned a lot. I think we're putting those lessons to good use here, and I think Lime Rock was a real turnaround. You know, we took the championship lead. I would just like to keep having weekends like we had this last weekend. And if we do that, and trouble-free reliability, we should be right up there at the end. I've also been competing in the Silver Crown Series in USAC this year, and that's been going pretty well. I'd like to be up in the top 10 in points if we can manage that. That plus the Trans Am Championship, that would just be a dream season for me.
It seems that now it's a sort of a transition in the world of motorsports. Where do you see it in the sport as a whole in the next 5 years?
Well, I think that's a deep topic, actually. And, that could be a long discussion. But I think, if you look at racing around the country, it still has a really strong fan base. And, I think that as long as the promoters and the venues remain vibrant, the sport will remain strong. And, the series themselves are continually having to innovate to get fans attract new fans. And I think with all of the new media that's out there, if it's used correctly, there's a great way for the sport to remain relevant, but also to be amplified. And I'm pretty excited about what could lie ahead for auto racing, and obviously I'm in it, so I've got a vested interest in its success. But anybody who goes to a race and experiences up close and personal the visceral, excitement of seeing these cars, the sounds, the sights, and the community that's around it. That when you couple in the social media element of being able to remain engaged in events beyond their completion and to constantly stay involved, and interact with drivers and teams on a direct basis as a fan, it's a great sport, it's a unique sport, and it's no less exciting as a spectacle than it's ever been.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program this evening, and hope you have a great season in both the Trans Series as well as the USAC Series, and hopefully we can talk to you again maybe after the year and see how every month.
It'd be my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Have a great night.
Okay, take care. Good night.
Once again, that was Chris Dyson, who in his own way is a racing legend. He's been in all sorts of different racing series. He's been around the sport for at least the past 30 years. His family's been in it for a long, long time. And hopefully it has a great future, I think, as his insight about the Trans Am series is something I've heard before from Andretti and others. It's kind of interesting. The cars are something to see, and hopefully a lot of people will go out to see them. I also agree with his stance on the future of motorsports. As we've talked on this program at length at times, that is really the key, is to engage the fans, have facilities that are state-of-the-art, that have to put on a good show, and to keep things going, keep the conversation going. And there's always going to be at least a little bit of a fan base for motorsports. My issue this past weekend at Palm Beach International is the fact that they seem to get going pretty well for a short period of time, and then slips back. And then they go forward again, and then slips back. And the fear is that it slips further back, and then it just sort of stops. Now, there are amazing people who work out there, amazing people. We had a great time. They were very friendly, and I had a small issue that was taken care of rather quickly at the facility, and that's great. I don't think that would happen at all venues or across the country. So that was cool. But it definitely needs some help. And I think that's sort of the trick, is to invest the time, to invest the money in the facility, the people, as well as the sport as in a whole. And I think that if they do that, then that'll be great, and it'll be successful. But tracks that fail to do that, and there are lots of tracks around the country that failed in several different ways, are doomed to close. And that's sort of a problem that motorsports is dealing with right now as well. There's also some consolidation in the world of motorsports. I know all of you have probably heard the fact that NASCAR and International Speedway Corporation have become one mega. They're basically that now. But to have them merge into basically just NASCAR, although the IAC will be the controlling interest, is kind of something. That that might be a good thing for the sport. It might not. There's also talk about Steve A. Motorsports Incorporated, the company that, is, that was founded, is currently run by Putin Smith and his family, going private as well. So I don't know how that, how well that'll go. I know that it has mixed results over the time, a long time, when IndyCar was a publicly traded company, and then it went private, and it succeeded. But it definitely had its share of problems, so we'll see how that goes. Should be a great thing in the future. There's a lot of amazing stuff going on in motorsports. There's discussions right now in Europe about the future of the sports car program. We talked about it a little bit. I believe we talked about it about 2 weeks ago. With our 3 weeks ago now, our guest at that time. So that was good. Again, I'm not sure if the DPI program, the current program here in IMSA, will be adopted wide, or if it will just be adopted by the ACO, which is the big club of the West that runs the law. But there are definitely some good changes happening in sports cars. There's some great things happening in a lot of different racing series. So we'll have to see how that goes. IndyCar is their new wheel that's going to be brought up next year. That's a wonderful safety innovation. It looks a lot better than the Halo system that they use in Formula 1, which we also discussed in this program in the past. We did the Halo system. So we'll see how that goes. Last weekend was a great weekend of racing. Could be the Indy 500, the Coca-Cola 600, as well as the Grand Prix of Monaco. I'd like to congratulate the winners of all three of those races. And Lewis Hamilton, who basically drove the wheels off the car, literally. The cars were going flat for basically half the race there. So that was kind of cool. 68 laps on a set of tires that was supposed to last at most 40 is something. So that was one thing. In the IndyCar race, of course, it was Simon Pagenaud who came away with a win there. That was a pretty awesome ending to the race. If you've watched any of that, you definitely weren't disappointed. It was a great race. Another great race at the Indianapolis 500. In the Coca-Cola 600, it was also a kind of interesting race. It did go on for a long time. There were an awful lot of cautions, and it went at least an hour longer than the anticipated runtime for the event. But that was pretty cool, too. Martin Truex Jr. came in there, which is pretty neat. Truex is an awesome guy. He's got some great causes he races for, and it's always cool to see how that comes away. He isn't exactly the best spokesman for the sport, I don't think, but NASCAR has a problem with that right now. They don't have exactly the best spokesman at all, and they need to work on it. But that's a personal issue for the drivers and a team issue that they need to work on themselves. So, again, it was a great weekend racing. This next weekend will also be pretty cool. They've got the race there in Detroit. They got the race in Pocono. Pocono's going to be hot. It's just going to be hot. That's really the only word you can think of there. Pocono is hot. It's probably going to rain in Pocono. It's probably also going to rain in Detroit. So they'll be battling weather in both of those cities. So let's see how that goes. And we'll talk about it briefly next week in the Thunderdome. Be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder. Well, the other shows on Speedway Digest Radio Network at SpeedwayDigestRadioNetwork.com. You can also check out the show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar. I also invite you to read the articles for all of our sports at SpeedwayDigest.com. Put out a few articles today in the Speedway section, as well as the racing section of the site, covering a lot of motorcycle news and a little bit of news about Trans Am and other series. So be sure to check that out. Also next weekend, which we'll discuss a little bit on this program as well, is the Formula Drift Series will be in New Jersey next weekend. I did think an invitation to go to that event. Unfortunately, I do have some prior engagements, so that won't be good. I'm going to be heading out of town next weekend, but it will not be on a jet plane paid for by a public plane. And also, those are opportunities that come across your desk, and I'm always very grateful to get those. And hopefully, I get a lot more in the future. So, we'll talk about that in about 2 weeks, because next week I will be back up to the Orlando area on Thursday night. So, no, Thursday night, next week. In addition, if you're a fan of South Florida and isn't, be sure to check out his news and information with Our Slice of Paradise at my family new site. It's starting to get a little more search now. For more fun, fantastic finds. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and by heading http://faborplumbs.wordpress.com. That is fabplumsfantasticfinds.wordpress.com. We hope you check that out. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks in the Thunderdome as we discuss the major issues in the world of modern auto racing. Have a great night.